From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. In a few minutes, finding treasure in the art of Masonic lodges and Odd Fellows homes. We'll start with the continuing drama between the state of Texas, the federal government, and six Syrian refugees trying to settle in Dallas. Yesterday, the state sued, saying the International Rescue Committee was planning to settle the refugees Friday. KERA's Stella Chavez has been following the story. Stella, what's the latest on this?
Well, Justin, the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, is one of about a dozen groups that contracts with the State Department to resettle refugees in Texas. And the crux of the state's lawsuit is that the federal government is required by law to consult with a state before putting refugees there. Texas argues it didn't get the proper consultation, and we haven't heard anything today yet about a potential restraining order. I tried getting a hold of IRC today, and a local official referred me to the New York headquarters, and we didn't hear back.
We've heard from officials in Texas on their position, but what do we know about the people who are being resettled here?
I talked to Anne-Marie Weiss-Armouche, who heads up the DFW International Community Alliance. Now, that's a group that works closely with immigrants and refugees. And she says a family of six is supposed to arrive in Dallas by tomorrow. She didn't know when or where, and that it's possible they could already be here. Most Syrian refugees usually come from Jordan via New York or Chicago. Weiss-Armouche has been in touch with another family member who moved to Dallas earlier this year, and he told her the incoming refugees are his half-brother and wife, two children, and the wife's parents.
So the refugee program really is a humanitarian gesture on the part of the U.S. We don't give as much money per individual refugee as our European friends do, but the numbers that we accept are larger. So we're doing our share as world leaders to be good partners and to help those that are less fortunate.
So where does Texas rank in the number of Syrian refugees who come here?
Well, Justin, Texas is actually number one right now. It took in 184 Syrian refugees in the last fiscal year, and California and Michigan resettled 179 each. Now, the decision isn't made by the state. Federal officials actually make that call, and then each resettlement agency decides exactly where the refugees will live. Weiss-Armouche says Texas is popular because there are jobs here. She knows several who tried first in other cities, but then moved to Dallas to find work.
But sadly, the jobs that refugees take, about half of them work at Walmart. Their take-home pay is $1,050 a month. When your rent is $700 or $800, if you have a large family, that's $1,000. By the time you've paid electricity and purchased gas for your car, you cannot buy your children a pair of shoes or a coat. And that's really the tragedy behind the face of the refugees. They come here with such hope.
So, Justin, it looks like this will all play out one way or another tomorrow.
Stella, we'll be watching. Thanks.
Thank you, Justin.
There was a time when one of every five American men belonged to a fraternal order, those secret societies like the Masons and the Oddfellows. They still exist. And for 20 years, North Texas gallery owner Bruce Lee Webb has been collecting their artwork and paraphernalia. His collection is the centerpiece of a new book he wrote called As Above, So Below. Webb tells Art and Seek's Ann Bothwell that his collection has led to a deeper understanding of history and to an unlikely friendship with musician David Byrne.
Bruce Lee Webb, welcome to the KERA Newsroom.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
What got you to start collecting fraternal paraphernalia?
Really, I think it's that I came along at a time when so many lodges were closing, and so I encountered fraternal costumes at a flea market and bought bushel baskets of the hats and the Oddfellows collars and some of the costumes. And I just thought the stuff was neat. I started to research it, and then moving to Waxahachie, joined first the Masonic Lodge in 1987 and then the Oddfellows. So it gave even more meaning to actually go through the ceremonies. And I really liked that so much of the ceremony is unchanged for, 100 years or more. Also, I love a really good mystery.
Some of these things really do look mysterious.
That's probably what I really like about them, is that mysterious look and feel, and it kind of alludes to, an old world, the old America.
Do you remember the first piece of fraternal paraphernalia that you acquired?
It's a carved wooden axe that's kind of oversized, and it has a heart and hand painted on the blade of the axe. I think it's probably from the 1880s, maybe 1870s. The heart and hand painted on the blade, I later realized that it alludes to charity. And the broad axe was often taken around the lodge room by the warden of the Odd Fellows, and the brothers would put change or money on the flat blade of the axe.
There's a whole chapter in the book on the heart and hand image, which is really beautiful and which shows up in other folk art as well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I know the Shakers use the symbol, and it also is used by a number of trade guilds in Europe, and it means to put your heart into your work. I've heard it explained like this: whatsoever may the hand find to do, may the heart go forth in unison. And I think that's one of the really beautiful things about fraternal symbolism, is there are bits of poetry that are kind of connected with some of these objects.
We have to talk about the goats. Mechanical goats that are kind of on what look like tricycle wheels.
For whatever reason, the goat became part of the American fraternal idiom. And companies like DeMolin Brothers and MC Lilly made these goat carts, and sometimes they even would have electric apparatus that would shock the candidates. And you had different aspects of the hazing that was kind of done just in sheer fun. The catalogs that DeMolin Brothers put out had really wonderful illustrations that you can just imagine the lodge secretary and the other members sitting around the desk deciding which one they're going to order. Do we get the fuzzy bumper, or do we want the whirling wonder that the goat spins the candidate around?
David Byrne, the musician, wrote the foreword to your book. How did that happen?
I've been a friend of David's for a while. We met back when he was doing True Stories here in Dallas. He's bought a number of pieces from me over the years, and I started thinking about it. He actually had Shriners in True Stories, so I think he's kind of been interested in the wackier aspects of America, too. And I know that David collects fraternal stuff himself, and I think he really wrote a beautiful foreword.
Bruce Lee Webb, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you very much.
You can see the axe, a mechanical goat, and other items from Webb's collection at an exhibition and book signing Sunday at Webb Gallery in Waxahachie. Find all that on our splashy new Art and Seek website. That's at artandseek.org. Today on Think, protecting your identity online. When you update your Facebook status or upload a photo to Instagram, it's not just your followers you're connecting with. Adam Levin, a cybersecurity expert, told Chris Boyd that every time we post to social networks, we're opening ourselves up to hackers.
People have this tendency to share every shred of information. You have to take pictures. Now, Facebook tends to scramble geotagging, and that's that little code in the picture that effectively tells somebody where it was taken.
Right.
But a lot of social networking sites don't. Plus, on social networking, people have a tendency to say, I'm going away tomorrow, and I'm going to be gone for X number of days,
right,
and I'll be back on whatever, and I'm so excited. And then they're on the trip, they're sending pictures, they're sharing experiences. Just remember one thing. When you're telling people where you are, you're also telling people where you're not.
Hmm.
Plus, with quizzes, people answer these quiz questions, and they don't realize that a lot of the answers are the same answers that they give to security questions on different websites that authenticate themselves.
Huh.
And so, as a result, we all think it's cute and it's fun and isn't it great, and we don't realize we're giving our lives away. And hackers, scammers, these guys are smart. They spend a lot of time studying this stuff. You remember, each of us has a day job, but for a hacker and an identity thief, we are their day job. And every piece of information that we provide somewhere is another piece of the mosaic that once they put it together, they've got us.
Adam Levin is the author of Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Fishers, and Identity Thieves. This hour of Think reairs tonight at 10, or you can listen to the podcast at kera.org/think. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.